Blog Talk Radio.
We greet you with the words, welcome to Africa on the Move. This is a program that is seeking to educate, to enlighten, and raise one's consciousness towards revolutionary thought and action that we hope will lead to revolutionary solutions to today's problems that are affecting Africa, African people, and humanity. We are honored to have with us today our brother Abayomi Ezekwe of Pan-African News and Haki Kamathi Muchoki of the African Awareness Association. They will address the topic for today, which will be Africa and U.S. foreign policy, the war against African people. We now would like to welcome our brother Abayomi and Haki to Africa on the Move. Welcome.
It's good to be here.
Let's put this discussion in its proper background context. Can you, Brother Bobby, just articulate this question as we talk about why is a free Africa, why is a free, liberated, unified, social Africa important to survival and freedom for African people in the U.S. and throughout the world? In essence, what we're really dealing with is the question of the primacy of Africa as it relates to oppressed African people.
Well, there's really no other solution until the African continent and African people worldwide unify against capitalism and imperialism and to build a socialist future for all African people, the masses of African people, the workers, the peasants, the farmers, the youth. There can be no peace or no stability on the continent. And when I think about just the news this weekend about France intervening in yet another country on our motherland, that is the Central African Republic, and reportedly they had entered the capital yesterday in Bangui. They're also involved in Mali under the guise of fighting terrorism. In the Central African Republic, they're saying they're involved to stabilize the political situation inside the country. And then we look at the role that the United States is playing, even under the Obama administration, which some people, even many of our people, had hope that he would chart a new course for U.S. imperialism in Africa, as well as the African world outside of the continent. It just brings home even further the need for organization, mass mobilization, political education, ideological clarity and uniformity among our people. Otherwise, we're going to be in a situation where we're going to get poor and they're going to even involve themselves even deeper in our internal affairs. And there can be no other solution other than socialism and the need for unification.
To Brother Haki, we're going to raise this question in another way, same way that, let's say, a brother who has no idea that he's an African, and he may come to you and say, why should I be aware of what's happening in Africa? What's happening in Africa today? How does that apply to me? How does that affect me today? What is significant of knowing what is going on in Africa, Brother Haki?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, in terms of identity, is important. And there's a tremendous amount of miseducation that existed in the Western world. Clearly, there are many, many African people who are not aware that, in fact, they're Africans, that, in fact, see themselves as set apart from Africa. And a lot of it has to do with the terms of the Western. I got a lot of feedback on this line. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah,
I got a lot of feedback.
Good.
Okay. All right. So there's a tremendous amount of disinformation that exists in the Western world to make sure that African people are not cognizant of who they are and their contributions to humanity. One of the things is when you go back and you look at the evolutionary flow in terms of history, one of the things in the Western world, they start with the Greek period. They don't go beyond that. In other words, they talk about history as though history only started with the Greeks. But even in the context of in the Greek period, then we understand a lot of the elite individuals, a lot of the elite artisans, people who actually control the society, in fact, were African people. But if you don't read people like Alvin Van Sertima, G.K. Osai, you wouldn't know that. So it's important that we understand the connection to Africa in terms of not only in terms of the birthplace of all human beings, but in fact, you know, the engine that drives the world. Now, having said that, I think also one of the things that you when you look at, as the brother alluded to, when you look at all of this this animosity, these wars that have been inflicted on Africa, you got to understand that Africa has a tremendous amount of resources. And the thing that the Western world needs in terms of continuing this expansionist policies in terms of the imperialism throughout the world, it needs the resources. And so, therefore, you see these endless wars are being conducted on Africa. And because Africa is the place of humankind, it's the birthplace of human beings, it's the birthplace of science, math, and all that, those imperialist capitals understand in terms of the importance to the world that Africa represents. And so, therefore, it's beholden to them to do all they can to make damn sure that Africa never comes together, that Africa never sees its true destiny, and certainly Africa never to fulfill its true destiny. So it's incumbent upon Africans, you know, throughout the Africa to understand who we are as a people and not be divided by this notion that, in fact, that our nationality is defined by, you know, no definition in terms of, you know, where we're born at. And so this inherent division that exists when we think like that is exactly what those the Western imperialist powers need in terms of making sure the division continues. Because while they continue to undermine and marginalize Africa, there is no movement in terms of in the Western world in terms of African people mobilizing to make sure that we not only end this, but to move Africa toward a more scientific, socialist kind of system, which not only ensures the longevity of African people throughout the diaspora, but human beings generally. So therefore, we got a lot at stake in terms of making damn sure, you know, that Africa is free and self-functioning. So this is a struggle for African people throughout the world.
I think at the beginning of the program, we said our theme is Africa and U.S. Africa and U.S. foreign policy, war against African people. When we talk about this concept of the word war can come in different forms and many forms. Can I get you, Brother Abadmi, to talk about what are some of the psychological wars that are being waged against our people now that we need to be conscious of, and how is it having an impact on our inability to get organized and to unite?
Well, that's very important, and the psychological war is constant. You have to look at the corporate media. They are in constant combative mode against African people, oppressed people and working people in general all the time. They're telling people that Africa is disorganized, that it is a place that is a basket case, that it requires the intervention of the Western imperialist powers. And then if you look at how African people are portrayed in the mass media, it's always negative. We're portrayed as criminals, as people who are worthy of imprisonment, lifelong imprisonment, or we're portrayed as those who are individualistic and materialistic. And the actual struggle of the people, what African people have contributed to world history, and the history in regard to the struggle against imperialism and capitalism and all unjust systems, is never really portrayed adequately. Even, for example, Martin Luther King, this is somebody who, in our history, the corporate media utilizes as a means of trying to say that King made a contribution to American society. But even the way they portray Dr. King is a distortion because, you know, Dr. King was a struggler. He was part of an organization. He was a part of a movement. He went to jail many times. He was under constant attack by the FBI and by the Justice Department and by the ruling class in this country. And towards the end of his life, he was moving more and more towards socialism. He had come out clearly against the war in Vietnam following the line of Kwame Ture, then known as Stokely Carmichael, and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. He, in fact, said that poverty had to be eradicated in the United States, not ameliorated, not reformed, but it had to be eradicated. And he said that the working people had to be at the center of the struggle. And that's what took him to Memphis a month before he was martyred. And that's what got him killed, his position against imperialism, his position against poverty, and his movement towards socialism. But this is never conveyed on those federal holidays by the corporate media, that this was King's position at the time of his death, and this is why he was targeted by the FBI. So this is a clear example. Same thing with Malcolm X. They try to, you know, say Malcolm X was violent, or they try to say that, you know, Malcolm X had changed and become more moderate towards the end of his life, when in fact he had become even more revolutionary towards the end of his life. Objectively, he was, you know, much more anti-imperialist, anti-capitalist, and moving definitely towards socialism as well. So these are just two examples of how they take two iconic figures in our history and distort them and try to use it against the capacity of our people to organize themselves.
Okay, to Brother Hakeem, you know, there's a saying, the more things change, the more they remain the same. Or there's another saying where people are talking about history's best reward those who research. Looking at the present conditions of Africa today and the surroundings of what is taking place internationally and politically as it relates to imperialism, there seems to be a coincide of similar history that took place previously during the Berlin Conference, 1884-85. Can you contrast, compare the similarities of what's going on today versus what took place around the Berlin Conference? Is this another sucker scramble to recolonize and try to gain control the resource and labor of African people?
You know, I think one of the things that we can't divorce is the whole notion in terms of the role economics plays in terms of Western behaviors. One of the things that when we look at the evolution of capitalism, one of the things, we had a point where we had what Neil McCammon refers to as disaster capitalism, which ultimately turns in the 80s turns into monopoly finance capitalism, which later gave rise to what we know today as globalism. And what it simply means is that at least step along the way, the power and wealth has been concentrated in the hand of fewer and fewer people. Now, here's the economics to understand. If you concentrate the power and wealth in the hands of fewer and fewer people, then the system, capitalism as we know it, cannot function. Capitalism is predicated on, at least as Adam Smith defined it, is predicated on the notion that the more money you put into the system, the more velocity it attains, then the greater the benefits to the overall economy. Conversely, if you take money out of the system, then what happens is the system contracts. And so what's happening is that those people in power, the capitalist class throughout the Western world, even though they have a lion's share of the wealth of the countries of the world, it doesn't do anything in terms of stimulating the overall global economy, which means there are fewer opportunities for jobs, fewer and fewer opportunities to make money, fewer and fewer opportunities for people to engage in the kind of lifestyle which is reminiscent of see the hope of the advantages that exist in society. And so therefore we have to understand that in that context capitalism is deteriorating. Now we've got to be very, very clear that the ruling class in the West understand quite clearly that capitalism is in decline. They understand that quite clearly. And in fact, one of the things is that when you start talking about socialism, even in the context of America, most people in America, particularly those under 35, are avid believers in socialism. And of course, this is something that the media would never talk about. But when we talk about the overall decline in terms of the capitalist system, then we got to understand that as it declines, then the people themselves become enemy of the state. Whether you say anything or do anything, it doesn't matter. You objectively become an enemy of the state simply because those who hoard the wealth, you know, of the system no longer can afford to provide or to create opportunities for those who are not part of that same power structure. And so therefore, you understand that we all become de facto enemies of the state. And this is account for the high incarceration rate of African people in the society. Now, even though the crime rate continues to fall, the incarceration rate continues to increase. In fact, in America, which has about 5% of the world's population, there has 25% of those incarcerated. Now, the question is, are all these young African-American Latin males, are they all somehow inherently bad? Are they the bad seed? Are they just prone to criminality? Of course not. The people in power understand the role in terms of the terms of capitalism and its adverse impact on the people who live under capitalism. You see, even though people in this society, people proclaim this to be a democracy. In fact, this thing serves from the truth. In fact, a democratic system, which speaks of egalitarianism or the greatest good for the greatest number of people, doesn't exist. Conversely, in this society, when people ask for jobs, what do you get? No jobs. People ask for fairness in the workplace. What do you get? No fairness in the workplace. African people talk about decent schools for their children. What do you get? On the contrary, you don't get good schools. What you get is a situation like in Detroit, where actually the government appoints a czar to run the affairs of the cities, to actually take over the functions of the city and to unilaterally decide, you know, what those cities can or cannot do, what they can invest in, what they cannot invest in. And so, therefore, this issue of democracy becomes very, very clear to those of us who understand history that, in fact, no democracy exists. In fact, it never existed, but it's simply a question of understanding the history of America. And that is the struggle for most of our people. And so, therefore, when you look at it globally in terms of what's happening to African people, in terms of the modernization of African people, you talk about investments throughout the world. Now, the West invests in Africa. Africa has the highest returns of any country in the world. And despite that, the modernization of Africa continues. In other words, the monies that are lent to Africa can never be, the people in Africa themselves can never use that money to empower their people or to develop their nations. And so therefore, there's this hostile relationship between those in the West, those capitalist class, and the people in African people, not only in Africa but throughout the world. And so we have to understand this hostility has an economic basis. And for any of us who think that, in fact, this is going to get better because Barack Obama is the president, is sadly deluded. And I just want to say one thing in terms of that, just in terms of Barack Obama's behavior. Even though on one hand he says one thing and does the exact opposite, this man is very, very clear his willingness to cooperate with Republicans in terms of cutting the social safety net. This man has stated verbally that he has no problem in terms of cutting Medicaid, Social Security, two systems which African people rely on heavily, given the historical oppression and the marginalization and the kind of unemployment or underemployment that exists among African people. So this man is willing to cut that. So this man's responsibility, his obligation is not to African people. His obligation is to the powers that be, to the status quo. And we have to understand that. And therefore, when we look at the history of the suffering to African people and American African people in Africa, we have to understand the correlation between what's going on. And this kind of hatred, this kind of ambivalence when it comes to the needs and aspirations of African people is global. And we have to understand it's not a fluke, it's a part and function of the economic system.
Okay, we're going to pause for a second and share with our audience. We'd like to welcome you to Africa on the Move. Today we discuss Africa and U.S. foreign policy, the war against African people. You can call in now if you have any questions or comments. We actually keep it down to a minimum, no longer than 1 minute. You can call in at 323-679-0841. That's 323-679-0841. You're welcome to call in. To Brother Abami, recently I read an article that you wrote titled U.S. Strategy, U.S. Stages, Military Exercises in Northwest Africa. I found the article to be very interesting. For those who may not be aware of what's going on in Africa, can you just give us a summation of some of the major points that you articulated in that particular article?
There were two major military maneuvers that were led by the United States Pentagon. It's United States Africa Command, AFRICOM, as it is popularly known. And one was called Operation Flintlock, which was a maritime operation focused heavily on the Navy and the Marines. It was led by the U.S., but it involved France and other imperialist countries along with neocolonial regimes in North Africa and West Africa. It was based in Mauritania. And then the second phase of these military maneuvers, which took place after Operation Flintlock, was Operation Sahara Express 2013. And this also was led by the U.S., and it involved about 20 different countries, including imperialist states in Europe, Canada, and also neocolonial regimes on the African continent. And it's done under the guise that they're, you know, mobilizing and training to fight terrorism and to enhance the national security capacity of these various African states. But what we've seen over the last several years since AFRICOM has been in existence is just the opposite. For example, in Mali, they were saying that the training of military officers in Mali, the supplying of military equipment, and even money to pay soldiers would somehow help the security of Mali. And what happened? We had Captain Amadou Sonogo, who was trained in several military academies right here in the U.S., staged a coup against the democratically elected government of Amadou Toumani Touré, and that is a direct result of U.S. imperialist policy in Africa. And the Tuareg question in northern Mali had been one that has existed even back during the period of French imperialism, during the early days of Malian independence under Modibo Keita, who was a Pan-Africanist, who was an ally of Ahmed Sekou Touré and Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, also Ben Bella in Algeria, had a captain, Captain Giara, in, I believe, 1963, who ruthlessly put down a Tuareg rebellion. And then, of course, there were other rebellions, and these rebellions are really a legacy of colonialism, the fact that the lines that were drawn, the decolonization process actually fostered these conflicts on the continent. But the point is, these internal contradictions have been dealt with internally over the last five decades, either through military action or through negotiations inside Mali or through regional organizations like the AU and other regional groups on the continent. Yet, when we have this penetration by the Pentagon of Mali, all of a sudden now, the Malian military and the government is incapable of dealing with its own internal conflicts. So I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't believe in a conspiratorial view of history. But we have to draw a correlation between the enhanced military efforts in Africa and the increased destabilization that is going on there now. And this is something that we have to address as a community, and it has to be done by the revolutionary and progressive forces, because we're not hearing anything from the Congressional Black Caucus. Obama, as Hakeem mentioned, is part and parcel of this whole process. They put a new face on imperialism, but in essence, it's the same.
You know, Brother Mami and Brother Hakeem, the last point will lead me to this question I'd like for both of y'all maybe speak to. And that question is, in order for imperialism to have the kind of impact and effects that it's having on Africa now, we realize that Nkrumah told us that neocolonialism will be the last stage of imperialism. What role has neocolonialism played to allow these kind of policies and these kind of tools of oppression to take root on the continent of Africa? Such as when you look at some of the tools of oppression that they use, such as when you talk about the OAU, you have the IMF, you have NAD, you have AFRICOM, which is stated earlier. You have these programs they call the social structure adjustment programs. How could those programs be that effective if there was not the existence of neocolonialism? Will y'all talk or address that particular phenomenon? Go ahead, Brother Hakeem, then we come to you, Obami.
Those institutions, Lee, are set up precisely to continue or to empower, you know, the imperialist impulse. So we have to keep in mind that it's not a fluke that they exist, and they are there because they're supposedly run government sanctioned programs that will make damn sure. I'm getting feedback again. Can you guys hear me?
Yes,
can you guys hear me?
Yeah,
okay, we can hear you. Yes.
So you have to understand that those institutions that you alluded to Brother, are precisely there to empower the imperialist forces in terms of, you know, practice imperialism throughout the world. So it's not a fluke. The thing is, I think that superimposed upon it, I think one of the things that we and we have to think seriously about the role of class in terms of the willingness of a segment of human beings to oppress other segments of human beings on a misguided notion that in fact that you benefit. In America, we talk about it being pragmatic. Then we talk about the African middle class in terms of their apathy as it relates to the suffering of the African masses. They see the position as a pragmatic one. In other words, if I keep my mouth shut, then you know, there's a likelihood, you know, I'll make a lot of money, lots of ruffling the feathers. But you got to understand that how big a price are you willing to pay before it becomes abundantly clear, you know, that your acquiesce to injustice, your acquiesce to suffering, only comes around to haunt you. At what point do you begin to realize that that is your offspring, whether it be your grandchildren, their children, their children's children, who pay a horrible price as a result of the practice that you're engaged in? So I think in Africa, this whole thing in terms of class is something that's rooted, unfortunately, a lot of times in tradition or culture. And so, therefore, it's something that we have to have some kind of discussion on. I know that's been a great hesitancy of Africans born in the West to engage Africans on the continent with respect to this question in terms of classism. But I think at this point in time, because our survival depends on it, that we have to have these discussions around the issue of classism. Because as it stands now, with these institutions in place, with monies that are guaranteed, they can simply identify who's the most corrupt in society, feed them money, and get them to do their bid. So it's a real, real problem. It's very, very problematic. And I think that that is one of the things that we have to really address is the whole question in terms of class.
Okay, Brother Bam, before you speak, let me just make this announcement that for the audience that we can go over a little bit, if you get cut off of this program, please go to our archive by blogging in www.blogtalkradio.com/Africa on the Move to hear the remainder of this program. To our callers, we still have a few minutes left. We encourage you to call in at 323-679-0841. Okay, let's continue. O'Brien.
Okay, yeah, the question of neocolonialism was taken up thoroughly by Dr. Kwame Nkrumah in 1965. That book is still in publication. People need to go back and read it. He identifies in that book the United States ruling class as the principal enemy of the African continent. This was written almost 48 years ago. It's almost prophetic. And when he wrote that book and published it, G. Menon Williams, who was the former governor of Michigan, he was the U.S. Undersecretary for African Affairs at the time, issued a letter of complaint against the Ghana government, and Nkrumah was overthrown some 4 months later. And also in regard to the class struggle, Nkrumah's book, Class Struggle in Africa, is a classic as well. And we still need to review that book as well. We need to popularize these texts because they contain a lot of the theoretical basis of what we need to evaluate what's going on in Africa today. And it's just amazing that decades later, the work of Nkrumah is still so relevant to what is happening on the continent today.
Okay. In terms of looking at this phenomenon of imperialism and the habit that's wrecking the Africans out of the world, can y'all give me some kind of projection of what you think Africa would be like in the next 5 to 10 years? Based on the present reality of what's going on now, Obama and then Haki?
Well, it depends. I mean, if the political situation accelerates and people, the leadership in various organizations on the continent solidify, it could represent a tremendous setback for U.S. imperialism and for NATO. There's that strong potential that exists there. If we are not able to reconnect with our historical legacy of struggle against imperialism, and if the balance of forces are not in favor of the African masses, then there's going to be more intervention, there's going to be more exploitation, and there's going to be more conflict and internal strife. And but I believe that you know, people are going to struggle, you know, against this new manifestation of neocolonialism because they really have no other choice. The alternative is not good at all. And then you have Europe in decline. Look at what's going on in Cyprus, for example, where the banking system is on the verge of collapse. And you look at Spain and Greece and Portugal, where unemployment is running well over 25%. So there's no alternative in Europe. There's no alternative here in the United States. They're being propped up by the government, you know, in terms of the banking system, the corporate industry. So Africa has no other alternative except to look inward and also to draw upon the history of the World Socialist Movement as a solution.
Brother Hackey, your response? 5T is an answer?
No.
What do you think we're
looking at? Yeah, I'm agree. I agree with brother. I think that dialectics is going to greatly push Africa in terms of understanding that the problems it's confronted with, they're gonna have to take a stand. Africa has to take a stand. I think when you look at the situation like in Nigeria, when you look at the Ongoni and other tribe ethnic groups actually you know taking up arms against major oil companies, I think it's a start in terms of the right direction. So I think that as the situation becomes more abhorrent, as the situation of sheer survival becomes more and more problematic, I think there's a certain dialectic which says that at this point you've got no other choice but to stand. So I think that's what's going to happen. But I think in the course of taking a stand, it's going to be bloody, because I think imperialist forces understand that because Africa possesses so many raw resources, that in fact it holds the fate of the Western world in its hand. And so therefore you can anticipate it being very, very bloody in Africa. And that's why it's so important for Africans throughout the world, in America, Central America, South America, Caribbeans, Europe, wherever Africans are, it's very, very important that we become involved in terms of what's going on and understand, you know, that this fight is not only be waged on the continent, but it has to be waged throughout the world in terms of breaking this chokehold that imperialism has over the world. So I think it's going to be a protracted struggle, but I think I'm confident that brothers and sisters in the continent and throughout the world are going to rise to the occasion.
Brother Hackey, you mentioned something just then that I want to discuss briefly, and that's around this question of the role that Africans in the United States can play as it relates to assisting their brothers and sisters in Africa in this whole question of imperialism. Given the fact that the two-party system here, the Democrat and Republican Party, both represent policies that's oppressing Africa and African people. What tools do the Africans inside the United States has that they can use as a means to change these policies and these behaviors as it relates to Africa?
Well, I think the biggest tool Africans in the society have is at least the access to information. There's nothing more than being able to share the information with Africans on the continent, Africans throughout the world. It's something that we have to struggle to bring to fruition. We did a pretty good job back in the 60s during the time of Malcolm. So we have to reinstitute to bring into existence once again this and understand this relationship in terms of Africans and on the continent, Africans in America, and a free flow of information to make sure, you know, that we understand necessity in terms of struggle. Because on the continent, there's a great deal of misperception. There's this notion that, in fact, that African people in America don't see themselves as part of the African struggle. There's also this misperception in America, where Africans on the continent don't particularly care about Africans in America. Now, to be perfectly candid, I mean, there is some of that. There's some of the antagonism that exists on both sides of the Atlantic, and it's a function of ignorance. And so, therefore, what I'm advocating is important in terms of information, not only to dispel this notion, in fact, that we don't have a common problem, but also information that can be utilized to empower, to get our people to move forward. I think it's very, very important. I think when African people in America speak, because the history of African people in America, and because for better or worse, we do have the perception, at least at one point in history, actually standing up to the powers that be, and we have this history in terms of spirituality, in terms of doing that which is right. I think we have some leeway in terms of being able to actually move Africans in the continent, you know, in the direction in which they need to go to. So I think the tools that we ride, brother, I think it'll be education. And of course, the struggle in terms of organization, that's something that we have to do internally in terms of, you know, getting together, but that's a totally different question. But just in terms of the continent itself, I think education is a wonderful tool in terms of knowledge is a wonderful tool in terms of getting people on the continent to move forward.
Okay, running down to the last few minutes, Brother Bami, we want you to take us out on this question. How do we move our people forward? What they need to do?
Well, it's a very simple answer, and as Kwame Ture used to say, you know, we need organization, we need political education. And that's still true today as it was in decades past. Otherwise, we're going to be spinning our heels, going in circles, locked into this two-party system that is really one party with two different names. And that's why we need independent organization outside both the Democrat and the Republican Party, because both of them are parties of imperialism, and they have very much the same position in relationship to Africa. If you look at it objectively, neither one of them are calling for the unification of Africa. Neither one of them are anti-imperialists. So, you know, that's why we need our own political party, and that's why we need to move forward on an independent basis.
Okay, on that note, we'd like to thank our listeners for the program today, for listening on the program today. And we'd particularly like to thank our guests, Brother Hackey and Brother Ezekwe, for sharing their views and perspectives on the thing, Africa and the U.S. foreign policy, the war against African people. We'd like to remind you that Africa on the Moon is a biweekly program. It comes on every other Sunday at 6 p.m. Our next program will be on April the 7th at 6 p.m. Until then, we'd like to thank you, and remember, continue to struggle, because through struggle, that's how you make progress, and since struggle is eternal, progress must be also. Until next time, remember, Africa is on the move. See you later.
All right, peace.